Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello, you're listening to the MFC podcast. Hosting tonight is myself, Jay. Sparra is currently sunning himself down in the tropics of Ayrshire this weekend. So I'm joined, as usual, by Buster and also amateur football legend Joe McKelvey. How are we doing, guys?
I'm good, thanks, Jay. Yourself?
Aye, not too bad. What about yourself, Buster?
Yeah, getting on fine, thanks.
Right, well, only one kind of place to start. We're recording on the Sunday evening. Not sure when we'll manage to get this online, but recording on the Sunday evening. So yesterday was the 1-0 defeat at Fir Hill to Partick Thistle. 1-0 defeat against a side that are perhaps in form at the moment. They were obviously going for top six, which they've now secured. So I suppose in the grand scheme of things, it could be considered perhaps an unexpected result, given we were probably massive underdogs going into the game. But Buster, even although it was just a one goal defeat, I think we've got to be disappointed with the performance overall.
Yeah, the first half, to be honest, was absolutely atrocious. I can't even remember anything positive about the first half, to be fair. The midfield was completely non-existent, and you know, the defending wasn't exactly great, especially for their goal. I think Ben Hennigan basically had to pay to get back in after that guy dropped the shoulder on him and walked past him. The second half was much more improved. You know, Thistle basically camped in their own half. Whether or not that was the true ourselves pushing forward, or you know, maybe if the, you know, that was their plan, I don't know. But you know, we're not scoring goals in it. We're obviously missing Louis Moult, but I don't really think the style of play has helped either. You know, I think Stevie Robinson, when he came in, said we're not going to be looking to play nice fancy football. We're going to be trying to grind out results. But unfortunately, we're doing neither of that now.
I mean, Joe, obviously, Buster mentioned in particular the goal for Thistle and Ben Hennigan getting torn to shreds. I think it was by Chris Erskine, and then the ball goes across, dangerous ball in, and Doolan's probably got one of the easiest goals he'll score this season. We've obviously been quite vocal and quite full of plaudits since Robinson came in that we've tightened things up, but was that goal a kind of sign that we're still pretty naive and pretty vulnerable at the back?
Absolutely. The thing for me was that I felt we were lucky to actually go in just a goal down yesterday. Thistle obviously had a few chances. They hit the post, and it was kind of really one of the most pathetic performances in the first half, certainly, that I've seen from us in a long time. We just couldn't seem to get a hold of the ball. We never strung two passes in the ground together. I think the closest we maybe got was Hennigan headed it to Pearson, and he headed it to Clay. I think that was perhaps our best passage of football in the first half. And it's just the way that, as much as Robinson might have tightened things up at the back since he came in, stopping the opposition score is only one part of being a defender. The other part of being a defender is you sort of being the first line of distribution. And the Accies game, I wasn't too dissatisfied with the distribution. It wasn't brilliant. We were going long all the time. But yesterday, it seemed we maybe got a bit more aim in them in the second half, but certainly in the first half, it seemed like the tactic was to play long balls, but every long ball we played was totally aimless. It wasn't aimed towards any of the three guys playing sort of the head of the 3-4-3 or the 3-5-2 formation, whatever you want to call it. We did kind of find Bowman with a few of them in the second half, but in the first half it was just like I could not believe I had paid £22 to watch it.
Well, interesting you mentioned Bowman there. You know, I suppose both of your thoughts will be interesting on him. I thought against Accies, played really well. Saturday, perhaps, obviously, he was one of 11 players who didn't play particularly well. I noticed in Steelmen Online, a few folk had kind of lumped him in with Blythe and a few other players as guys who clearly hadn't worked. But I actually felt a little bit sorry for Bowman a little bit on yesterday's game. There was a good couple of times, particularly in the second half, where he was doing a good job of holding the ball up. And you were practically watching as Bowman stood there with his back to goal, holding the ball up, and not one Motherwell player, you know, darted in or tried to make a chance or tried to just be, you know, the free jersey for the ball. And I mean, you can get somebody like Bowman holding the ball up all day, but if you've got nobody running off him, then you're just not going to do it.
I think Bowman's not too bad, to be fair. He's certainly shown me in the last couple of weeks that he's a bit better than I thought he was going to be. As you said as well, I feel kind of bad for him because despite the fact he's, you know, maybe the taller of the players in the team, he doesn't seem to have a good timing on his jump, to be fair. But, we're punting the ball at him, and I think he's actually better with the ball at his feet from what I've seen over the last couple of weeks. And as you said as well, a couple of times he got the ball in, and his feet, held the defender off, back to goal, and he was looking to make, you know, a pass, whether the layoff or a shot or whatever, but there was nobody even helping him out. I don't know, I think it's a bit harsh to completely write him off, but it's obviously not been great for him this season. But I think, you know, given a run in the team and, you know, maybe we better players run about him, he'd maybe be a lot more useful to us.
I kind of think it's along the same lines as Buster. I haven't actually, I worked out that I think the last time I seen Bowman start prior to the Accies game on Wednesday was the Inverness game in October, where he started up front with Moult and we got beat 3-0. McDonald got dropped that night, and actually on Wednesday night against Accies he was man of the match for me. I also thought that he was a lot quicker than I imagined he was going to be, and that's probably down to the fact that most of the time I've seen Bowman, it's maybe been 10-minute spells here, 10-minute spells there, so you can't actually kind of judge a player. But over 90 minutes on Wednesday night, I thought he was really good. Thought he offered us kind of an outlet at times, sometimes from nothing. He did obviously miss quite a gilt-edged chance in the first half, but I would agree with you, yesterday certainly wasn't. I'm not going to turn around and say he was a world beater yesterday, and I don't think it would take a lot. I don't think there are a lot of players that can come out of yesterday's game with their head held high, but he certainly wasn't top of my list in terms of who I thought were the villains of the piece yesterday.
Just in terms of players who could perhaps, you know, come away with their heads held high, one player springs to mind for me, and it's Keith Lasley. You know, obviously hasn't been starting games recently. Gets the, you know, the nod at half time, comes on and basically changed the game for me. I think Ainsworth, you know, offered a little bit of energy going forward, but I think the second half we controlled most of the possession. We didn't create a great deal with it, but for me Lasley was a big part of that. But I mean, Buster, how much of that is, you know, Keith Lasley coming into the game and being able to influence the play and being able to, you know, improve the performance, or how much of it is just the fact that our central midfield pairing of Pearson and Clay seems to be non-existent at the moment?
Yeah, Pearson and Clay yesterday were atrocious, I thought. As you says, Lasley came on and he seemed to be the one who was picking up any of the second balls. You know, he was being a midfielder, and we didn't have that at all in the first half. So it was good to see, you know, Keith Lasley coming on. He gets a wee bit of stick, you know, basically because people say his legs are gone, you know, he's past it or whatever. But again, based on performances like yesterday from everybody in the midfield, I think you'd have to say he's probably still our best midfielder. You know, I know everybody's going to agree with that, but I'd rather have had him in there than Pearson, for example. As we said yesterday, Pearson and Clay were utterly atrocious. I don't think Pearson's offered anything at all, really, if he's came back. I know Hank Sparra said he was, you know, very good versus Rangers, but obviously I didn't see that, so fair play, you know, if he was. But it was good to see Keith get in there, and as you say, putting a decent shout, his hat in the ring for a starting place next week. But I think something has to be done in there, aye.
Unfortunately, he's actually suspended, I believe, next week.
Yeah.
But I have to agree with pretty much everything you've said there, Bust. I think the last time I was on the podcast was in January, and that was a day where me and Jake and I had a big debate. He went one side of the view and I went the other about keeping Lee Lucas. And one of my reasons for saying I wouldn't have kept Lee Lucas was that I thought that our squad had such a surplus of centre midfielders, and we would be looking to bring Pearson back in, who for me last season was one of our, if not our best player last season. So now that you consider that, kind of the 4 months down the line, we were talking about having a major excess of centre midfielders, and I have thought at times this season that Lasley has maybe, there's games where he's had to play the 90 minutes off, where the last 20 minutes he's maybe showed his age, and he's maybe chased a ball, get beaten to it, and then can't get back into position. But I mean, there's absolutely no shame in that when you're 37 years old and you're still holding your own, playing top flight football in Scotland. But again, it does just show that how much of a letdown Clay's been, how much of a letdown Lucas has been, and how much a letdown ultimately Pearson's been, that we are kind of saying that our 37-year-old player should be our best midfielder in front of all of these options. But it's absolutely true. And the thing I've noticed about Pearson, every time I've seen him since he comes back, there seems to be a reluctance from him to go right through something, whether it be a tackle, whether it be to play a pass with full force. Every time he's hit a shot, it's looked really, really weak. It just seems it's been really apparent to me, particularly Wednesday night and yesterday. There was a couple of times yesterday where there was a 50-50 that he just sort of had kind of almost put a sort of wee namby-pamby effort in. Then there was one he had a shot on Wednesday night, and it wasn't much more difficult than a back pass for the keeper to deal with. So I don't know what's going on there. I mean, you're talking about a guy who scored 9 goals for us from centre midfield last season. I know he's 34 now, but I mean, how much can you decline over such a short period of time? He was only awake in 3-4 months playing in India.
I believe he came back injured as well. You know, I think he was struggling with his fitness when he came back. But again, that was, what, 2 months ago or something now? So you'd maybe expect him to go over that unless we've been putting him in there when he's maybe known, you know, maybe he'd be better sitting off a couple of weeks again. But it's interesting, again, that you mentioned Lee Lucas. I was against re-signing Lee Lucas as well, mainly because, you know, the stupid tackle against Hamilton. He's trying to win himself another 6-month contract, and he dives in with 2 feet, and I was pretty upset at that. But has Lucas even played a game since then? You know, where is he, basically?
Basically, he has actually played. The one telling contribution he's had, and this is one thing, how he seems to almost have disappeared out of the plans. I don't know whether he's injured just now or what the state of play is with that, but I did notice in the club posted a YouTube video the other day, the players at training, and they seem to be there, so it doesn't appear to be injured. But the one contribution he's had, probably since he re-signed that time, is he actually got an assist for Scott McDonald up at Ross County, and a very, very rare win for us this calendar year. So as much as he's contributed very, very little and hasn't played games and doesn't appear to be in the plans, in terms of what he's contributed to our points total in 2017 so far, you might argue it's actually quite substantial.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, how much has the centre midfield almost been overlooked when fans have been looking for, I don't want to say scapegoats, but more reasons for the fact that we are really poor, particularly, you know, recently, the last couple of weeks. But I suppose we can come on to talk about that. You know, it's whether your glass is half full or half empty, I suppose, depends on how you look over the last couple of weeks. But just in terms of the season as a whole, we are obviously, you know, if we miss out, if Molt's not playing, we look impotent up front. We know how bad our defensive problems have been. A lot of fans had chosen Craig Sampson as the scapegoat. And let's be honest, Craig Sampson could go on to be a world-class goalkeeper from now until the summer and folk would still, you know, moan about him after every game. And yet, for me, the midfield has been such a massive, massive negative for us this season. Under McGee, we did have a surplus of midfielders, and those were almost rotated on such a regular basis that there was never any real consistency in the middle of the park. You know, we've got McHugh that can play in there and is only not playing there because we don't have centre-halves. You've got Lucas, who appears to have vanished off the face of the earth. Obviously, Campbell was kind of brought in, started at Aki's, probably could have went on and been man of the match if Lucas hadn't been sent off, and Campbell obviously then had to, you know, almost take on two roles at that point. Pearson has been a wasted jersey for me since he came back. Clay, I perhaps don't subscribe to as quite a negative opinion as some, but I can see that what he offers is very, very limited. In fact, to borrow, you know, the phrase from George Burley when talking about Broadfoot, I think he is a player of limited ability and he doesn't really offer a lot. And then, of course, you've got Lasley, who, if you listen to people on Steelman Online, is finished and should be on the scrap heap, and yet comes on yesterday and was pretty much the only positive. I mean, you know, Buster, how much has the centre midfield been the been a big, massive reason for where we are? And more worryingly, you know, how do we kind of rectify that with six games to go?
I think you're right. I've mentioned it a few times that it has basically been a problem for us. How we rectify it, I don't know. Everything you said there, I can't really argue with, other than, you know, maybe your Craig Clay, because I think you know that I've not got a very high opinion of him. As you said, though, you know, he doesn't offer anything fantastic, but he doesn't do anything terrible either. Just sometimes I think he goes missing and you don't see much of him. But I think all our problems have basically stemmed from the midfield. They don't seem to be helping the defence in any way. I know they also don't seem to be helping the attack in any way either. I mean, I don't know who our top goal scorer midfielder would be, but I know, you know, I think Cadden's got one, I think Clay's got one, Piero's got one. You know, so I don't think...
If you're talking league goals this season, actually only Moult, McDonald and Ainsworth have scored more than one league goal this season.
Right, cool. See, I mean, again, I was just going to say, like you said last year, Joe, where, you know, Pirro had nine goals. If we had somebody in the midfield who, you know, had put the ball in the back, put the ball in the goals nine times this year, you know, it'd certainly make things a lot easier for us, and we wouldn't be sitting second bottom of the league, I don't think.
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking last season we had nine goals from centre midfield from Pearson, and we had six from Johnson in the wider areas. We haven't had that this season. We're fortunate that we're in a position that we've got two strikers who probably would be the envy of a lot of teams in the league, but again, two strikers is only as good as the supply you get to them. And for me, for how we've played in a creative manner this season, for I think McDonald's on eight league goals and Molt is on 12, I think. So I think they're definitely 10 and 15 overall, but I think Molt's got three cup goals, McDonald's got two. I think their tallies kind of are very, very kind of reputable given the service they've had this season. Whereas, I mean, it's just like, normally you do rely on your strikers as your main source of goals, but I mean, last season we had Ainsworth wasn't featuring much, a couple of goals, Johnson scored goals, Pearson scored goals, whereas this season we've got a few people on one goal other than Molt, McDonald and Ainsworth, who's three in the league. So it's guys around the park aren't offering anything. And you might think that there might be days where Mo isn't going to finish well. All strikers have those days. There might be days where McDonald's the same. And I mean, it's around those days where last season we had Pearson scoring a goal, or Johnson scoring a goal, or maybe Ben Hall or McManus scoring a header from a corner or whatever. But we just don't seem to have that this season. I mean, I don't think Hennigan hasn't scored this season. McManus hasn't scored, so we've not had that kind of threat from set pieces or anything. Clay scored up at Inverness. A couple others have got one goal, but it's just we're just not scoring enough goals, but we're also not creating enough to score the goals as well. I mean, there isn't too many games you come away with thinking we missed this chance or we missed that chance. Quite a lot of the time, the frustration with me has been that we haven't created that chance.
Absolutely. One thing I was thinking, though, when you mentioned about set pieces, and I suppose it ties in when I mentioned earlier about the last couple of games, whether your glass is half full or half empty. You know, we went into the Rangers game, played really well, created probably more chances at Ibrox than we have done for a considerable amount of time. Probably very unlucky just to take a point. So you could argue that was 2 points dropped. The game at Accies, you know, on the Wednesday night, we could have been a couple of goals ahead at half time. Again, is that, you know, 2 points dropped? Even the game yesterday, although we were poor, you had the Cherney save from the Zach Jules header. So, I mean, you're looking at, on those three games, if Fodering doesn't pull off the double save from the corner into the box, then we potentially win at Ibrox. If the linesman gives what I think was quite a clear goal from the Ben Hennigan header, we take 3 points against Accies. And if Cherney hadn't pulled off what was a phenomenal save from a Zach Jules header, we potentially take a point from Thistle. So, I mean, have we been unlucky as well as pretty poor these last three games? Is that relegation form? You know, at the end of the day, there seems to be, every so often you'll get a team in the league who are just terrible and they will crash and burn and they will finish so far off the pace they'll go down. Other times the relegated sides or the sides who find themselves in the playoffs are the sides who things just don't go their way. And is that what we're seeing at the moment? Because that is three games there that we could have taken 7 points from if we just had a little bit of luck. If, you know, if Zach Jules had just, you know, a little bit more power in the header. You know, if the linesman had seen that the ball was over the line for Hennigan's header, if Fotheringham hadn't pulled off what was essentially a world-class double save, we could be almost safe for relegation already. And instead, we're going into a vital game on Saturday. Heads are down. You know, we're being very critical because I think we're right to be. But are we now seeing the kind of the bad luck that does go against sides who ultimately end up paying the price?
I would say so, yeah. I think this season we had the goal at Thistle that was wrongly disallowed the first time we played them away in September. And if I remember correctly from the time, I think the ref or the linesman or whoever you want to apportion blame for to had an absolute stinker with it. I'm sure the ball was played backwards towards McDonald who finished it. And then you've obviously got the phantom goal that happened at Dens Park, and then the goal that on Wednesday night that for me was quite clearly a goal as well. I agree with you. I cannot remember a time when there's been three incidents of that kind of nature in one season for us. I don't know whether maybe they've just been masked by us then creating and scoring other goals to kind of compensate for that. I'm not sure. But I certainly can't consciously remember that. And whether it's a myth or a legend that when things happen like that to a team that it's kind of the sign of a team that's not doing well, it certainly will kind of maybe make the heads drop. Because I mean, that game against Dundee, we don't score that goal, then we get torn apart, and we were well deservedly beaten that day. The game against Thistle, we ended up getting a draw, but could that have edged us into 3 points? There is certainly going to be an aspect of a footballer who can't help but think when things like that happen that it's going against them, that things out with their control are happening. And this season, I would say there has been certain things, even like losing Johnson at the 11th hour, which was, I'm not going to say totally out with our control, but certainly a lot of it was kind of not probably what we would have wanted, but the player put in the transfer request and the bid came in and whatever. Things like that. McHugh's injury certainly has counted against us over the course of the season, because he's actually been one of our bright spots in recent weeks. There's been lots of things that haven't been within our control that have gone against us, but we've also failed in the things that have been within our control as well.
Well, that's that, isn't it, Buster? I mean, at the end of the day, I don't want to make it sound as though I'm making excuses or, you know, woe is us and pinpointing bad lucks, but at the end of the day, we just haven't been good enough.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a believer in you make your own luck, basically. Fair dues, you know, is just to go back to Cherney's save on Saturday. You know, it was a great save. It was a pretty good header as well. You know, there wasn't much more Zach Gill's could have done. It was right in the corner. The goalie's just got down and made a fantastic save. But if you look at the stats for the game, the first half, as we've mentioned, we were absolutely atrocious. I don't think we had any shots in goal. In the second half, we had all the ball, made all the chances. I don't think Patrick Thistle had shots in goal in the second half, but I don't think there was a save that either goalkeeper in that game had to make other than that Cherney one. I can't remember, you know, Cherney actually saving the ball for a shot other than that one time. Again, it was the same at Hamilton, fair dues. I think they cleared one off the line, and then there was obviously the phantom goal. Did it go in, did it not? Other than that, I don't think the Hamilton goalie had a shot to save either. And again, Rangers, you know, we've just come, you know, maybe didn't really have any control over that, to be fair. The goalie's just came on to a good game against us, somebody who I didn't really think highly of, but he had a great performance against us, unfortunately. But I think, you know, as I said, I think you make your own luck in a way, and if we were able to hit the target with more of our shots, there's definitely going to be more chance of a goal in these instances.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did have a wee look just to refresh my memory before doing this. I mean, I think the official stats were one shot on target to each team yesterday. I think, you know, Thistle went close a couple of times. They hit the bar from the deflected shot from Stephen Lawless, and then obviously got the goal. And I think obviously our shot on target was the Jules header. But other than that, there wasn't much else. Just moving on slightly to Stephen Robinson himself. One of the things I noticed was his post-match comments, and in particular the line in which he said that we lost the game in the first 30 minutes, which kind of stuck out for me, because ultimately we lost the game 1-0. Now, I don't want to, you know, it's far too early to start, you know, picking holes in things that a new manager is saying or doing. I think we'd like to think we're most Motherwell fans understand that, you know, it's still early on the job. But that to me kind of stuck out as quite a bizarre thing to say. I mean, Joe, is it possible to lose a football match 1-0 in the first 30 minutes, considering you've still got an hour of football to play?
I get the basis of what he's trying to say, but I don't agree with it. I think what he's suggesting is that we kind of had such a woeful first half an hour, lost a goal, and then Partick kind of shut up shop, and we couldn't break them down. So I think that's maybe what he's intended to come across as saying. But I mean, the fact that we then couldn't break it down, he has to kind of hold his hands up to an extent to that. Because I mean, you play an hour of football, you should have the tools to cause trouble to a team in your own division. I mean, we had a lot of possession second half yesterday, but I mean, we didn't necessarily trouble Partick Thistle. And I think that's kind of happened a number of times this season, where a team have gone and go ahead of us, and then we kind of don't have any sort of answer for it. They maybe then sit in and then get their second on the break or whatever. But I think, I don't know whether that's a game plan of Partick Thistle's yesterday, but we certainly didn't have any answers from them. The one thing I would say about Robinson so far is I just feel that maybe the 3-4-3 or the 3-5-2, whatever way you want to talk about it, worked to an extent at Ibrox, where we got a point and we were very unlucky not to get three. But thinking about it, there has to be an element of horses for courses, and it clearly didn't work against Hamilton, and then it clearly didn't work yesterday, given that we changed to a flat back four at half time. But the thing for me is, last week you look at the team against Rangers, and you've got Bowman, Moe, McDonald, Freer and Cadden. And Pearson as well, you might say, is quite an attacking player as well. And you look at all of them, we're first trying to work out the formation. And having all these attacking players in the team is only bold for me if you're playing them in attacking positions. Whereas Freer playing as a left wing back and Cadden playing as a right wing back isn't using them in an attacking sense. So for me, that's not attacking, and that's kind of been a slight gripe of the past two games for me. What you're only doing there is you're moving attacking players into defensive positions where they're going to less adequately carry them out than a defensive player. So I think he has misused players. And yesterday, even when we went to the four, it was a bit better. But I just feel we are kind of misusing our players just now.
I think that, just to go back to, you know, I've not seen Robinson's interview or post-match comment, sorry, but just to go back to what Jay was saying, saying we lost it in the first half hour, I think that's pretty much insane. You know, as you're saying, if it was 5-0 after half an hour, fair enough. But to say that, you know, a 1-0 game, especially as when it comes to the second half and, you know, we had all the ball, all the possession, all the chances. I don't know if you got that there, Jay, but the Flash Scores app there breaks down the stats and the possessions and stuff like that in the first and second half. And I sent it there on the wee podcast group chat. Sorry, I missed you, Joe. But it's night and day when you look at it, to be honest with you. The first half there, we had two attempts, apparently. Second half, we had six attempts. Again, only one in goal. The Thistle stats as well are unreal. They had it all in the first half, we had it all in the second half. And to say that we lost that after the first half hour, I don't understand that, to be honest with you.
Well, see, I think
I can understand kind of what he means by it. And I can understand, like, see, if it was one of us three being the man in the stand, who would think, well, that's us a goal down, I can't see us getting back from that. What he's basically admitted by saying that is, when my team goes a goal down, we don't have the answer. And he really should be the man with the answer, so to speak.
I think that's the concerning thing. I mean, even further on, I mean, I've not actually had time to listen to the interview itself. I'm going by the quotes on the BBC news story, both his quotes and Alan Archibald's. And he goes on to say, you know, about how we dominated the second half, which, you know, it just seems very strange. As Buster says, you know, if you go maybe two, possibly three goals down in that first 30 minutes and then you come out afterwards and say, well, we'd lost the game in the first half hour, that makes perfect sense. To lose a game 1-0 in the first 30 minutes it's very, very concerning. Considering that's us down, you know, we've dropped in below Aki's, albeit, you know, in joint points, but we're 11th place. If the suggestion from that is genuinely that teams just need to score against us, all they need to do is open the scoring against us and the game's lost, that is very, very, very worrying. That will see us going down this season, because we are not going to go the next six games without conceding first. We're not good enough to do that. So the idea that we can lose a game in the first 30 minutes simply by conceding one goal despite dominating the second half, I just found really, really concerning and really worrying. And don't get me wrong, it might be that, you know, Robinson, he's primarily a coach, so maybe he's just not, you know, fully thinking through what it is he's saying. Maybe he's not had the savvy sort of media training. But it just really stood out for me, because I just don't agree that there are any football team in the world that can lose a game 1-0 in the first 30 minutes. If you had a team from the third division going to play Celtic at Celtic Park and they concede in the first 30 minutes, you know, the game's not lost. They still may go on and get a point or even, you know, manage a point, a replay if it's the cup or whatever, or sneak a win. The idea that you could lose a game with an hour left to play by conceding one goal, I just find really, really worrying. And when you tie it in with what we've been saying previously about the, you know, no midfield, the bad luck we've had, and just the general feeling, it's really hard to see, you know, where a spark's going to come from.
I think I agree with you. It's one of those things that I think that Steve Robinson, even if he did feel that, it's not certainly a thing I would have said in national press after the game. That's a that's the thing for me about it, is he might feel it that we're down, but that's what he takes away and sort of earns confidence with the players and works with them in the training ground and kind of tries to instill a mentality about how to play when you go a goal down. It's not like he kind of wouldn't kind of go for the national admission that's us beat. I don't know if Richie Foran's maybe seeing that, and he's maybe going to train his players this week to sort of come out of the traps right away and try and get the first goal. It's very possible. It's a massive game, and Inverness are kind of veering into now a situation where they've almost got nothing to lose. I would say kind of, because if they come out and have a go at us on Saturday, they can get 1 point behind us, but if it goes the other way, kind of, we're 7 points ahead of them. And in theory, that's a big gap to kind of to stop us going down automatically. But yeah, obviously, we've seen us lose so many games and concede so many goals and not win two in a row all season. So 7 points isn't a bulletproof gap, but certainly it is something that raises concern that Robinson thinks that way 3 or 4 weeks into the job.
I mean, obviously, we'll speak a wee bit more about the Cali game in a wee while, but in terms of Robinson, I don't want to, you know, be negative in terms of his comments. I think that we've seen an improvement of some sort. We're still not good enough, I don't think. You know, particularly yesterday, very, very poor in that first half. I think the jury's still out in some of the tactical decisions. But I do think, Buster, we've seen an improvement, particularly defensively, since Robinson's taken over from McGee.
Yeah, there's definitely been improvements. As you say, it's one of those things where, you know, he's been in a job 3 or 4 weeks, so you can't really have a, you know, maybe you can't even really make a full judgment on it, to be fair. But as I said earlier, you know, I think he said at one point, we're not going to be pretty. We're going to have to grind out results. We're certainly not pretty, but we're not grinding out any of the results either. Barring maybe the draw at Ibrox, to be fair, that was a good result, to be fair. But we really need to start picking up points. And he's shown before that he's not really afraid to change things. So maybe going back to the centre midfield, maybe, you know, it's time that we brought in some of the younger guys, maybe like Campbell, who played against Hamilton that time. You know, maybe give these guys a chance. And as I think I said last week, or, you know, whenever it was, sorry, we recorded last, I'd like to see Chrissy Cadden moved into the middle as well. I don't really believe he's a right-sided player. But again, maybe I'm just miles out in that, but I'd like to see him move inside. And if he's going to persist with his, you know, as Joe mentioned earlier, wing-backs there, I'd rather see Richard Tate play that role and maybe move Cadden inside. The one thing I don't like about the wing-back thing as well is that I don't think it's bringing out the best in Freer. Freer's been really doing really well, but I think if you have to rely on him to come so far back at times, we're maybe missing out on his creative ability. You know, as his stats for the past go to show, he loves an assist, so and he's got a few for us already, I think. So it's maybe about time we went to, you know, a flat back four again and played with two wide midfielders.
It's interesting you mentioned just the idea of younger players, because I wanted to move on a wee bit, but before we talk about the actual Cali game on Saturday itself, one thing that's perhaps been mentioned amongst ourselves, but I think, you know, it's kind of maybe getting rumblings elsewhere in the Motherwell support, is the sort of the idea of some of our younger players and their Twitter accounts. Don't want to, you know, name names at anybody with Twitter accounts. Twitter profiles are public, people can go on and see. But there seems to be, you know, a slightly, a growing culture, if you like, amongst maybe a small handful of our younger players, in which they are, I don't know, primarily football fans on Twitter rather than football players, in that a lot of their tweets seem to centre around their big teams, shall we say. As I said, don't want to name names, don't want to name teams. It's something that perhaps is a bit of a new phenomenon anyway, just because we're now in the age that, you know, all football players tend to have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. It's something that perhaps was not an issue 10, 15 years ago, but it's something that's getting more noticeable. You know, guys who are professional footballers at Motherwell Football Club, who are paid by the club, you know, perhaps tweeting about teams in the same league because that's their boyhood club. I mean, Joe, where do we stand on that as Motherwell fans? Is this, you know, naive football fans just getting behind their boyhood teams, or is it unprofessional behaviour?
In the context, for me, it's unprofessional behaviour. I think the major thing for me is, if these guys want to support the teams that we're not going to name, then that, and they have done since they were a kind of boy in their private lives, and that's kind of that's fair enough. I mean, had I had the fortune to be a professional footballer and had grown up supporting Motherwell all my days, but say ended up playing for another team in the division, it would be difficult for me not to kind of look upon a Motherwell win with fondness. But I mean, I think I would have more respect to the team I was playing with to kind of shout it from the rooftops, if you like. And the key thing for me is, if these guys want to have social media accounts where they want to talk about their big teams per se, then their Twitter bios or whatever shouldn't say professional footballer at Motherwell FC. That's kind of almost, if you like, they might have the disclaimer of these views are my own or whatever. I don't think any of them will particularly be as savvy enough to have that on their profiles, right enough. But when their tagline says professional footballer at Motherwell Football Club, that kind of ties them to us. When they're making these comments, it's embarrassing for the club, it's disrespectful for the supporters that in essence pay their wages, and I think these guys just need to wisen up. There's one thing that I can put it to kind of relate to the pre-social media days, if you like, the way you were saying there. I can remember when I would have been about 12 or 13, and it was an open day in the summer, and McFadden was obviously mobbed at the time. I think it was just sort of the summer after he'd finished the season scoring that hat-trick against Livingston, and it was kind of the worst kept secret at the time that McFadden had grown up supporting Celtic. But so many, and he was being linked with Celtic at the time, and so many people come up to him at this open day and said to him, what team do you support? Every person that asked him, he answered Motherwell. And I think that's the difference. I think if you were to ask one of these players, if someone off the record, a Motherwell fan, even in the same kind of context at an open day or whatever, was to ask one of these young players, what team do you support? One of them would have said Team X, Team Y. That's not Motherwell, ultimately.
I mean, obviously, I don't want to pretend there's confidentiality agreements on the teams. We're, of course, talking about Rangers and Celtic. But, I mean, Buster, where does that... You know, because I'm kind of conscious that, on the one hand, there is no reason for these guys not to support Rangers and Celtic if that's the teams that they've been brought up supporting. And I would also argue that if, you know, for example, Shea Gordon announced, you know, the Northern Irish team, his well wishes for whatever Northern Irish team he might have grown up supporting. I'm not suggesting he has grown up supporting a Northern Irish team rather than Rangers and Celtic, but... You know, just the idea, though, or in English, if we had an English young player who was tweeting about his, you know, boyhood heroes, Spurs or Stoke or whoever, we wouldn't tend to bat an eye, at it. So why, where do we draw the line? Is it unprofessional because they're in the same division of us and as us, and therefore there's kind of a vested interest there? Is it disrespectful because they're kind of known as the kind of teams that the Motherwell fans and fans of other non-Old Firm teams don't tend to like? Or are we just, you know, being a little bit oversensitive about it?
It's a bit of both, to be honest with you. Me personally, I don't really care. But however, if they were to go over the top with something, you know, I could probably see myself getting pretty annoyed pretty easily. But I think it's to do with the fact that, you know, these teams are pains in the arse. When their fans come to Fir Park, or when you go to either of their places, you know, you get treated like shit, and you know it's not a nice thing to have. So to have somebody who is, you know, part of your team commenting on something about them, I can see why people would get wound up by it. But I think it's something which is, it's mainly due to the fact that, you know, these are our rivals, if you want, maybe not, you know,
league position or ability-wise rivals, but they're in the same league. You know, we know what they're like. We know who they are. So it's going to be a pretty annoying, for example, if they come out and start tweeting about Celtic or Rangers rather than, I think it was Josh Law supporting Man U constantly tweeting about Man U, but nobody really cared about that.
It's the fact that they're in the same division as us that's the major thing for me. It's that they're in the same league, and that three or four times a season, this team that these guys have publicly proclaimed their support for, they'll be playing against them. And I know the two players in question, who I won't name, who kind of tweeted in favour of a certain team in the Old Firm match, weren't playing when it happened. But I'm pretty sure that the team that they sort of voiced their support for were Motherwell's next fixture at the time. So if you look at the kind of naivety of that, it's like, come on the Rangers or come on the Celtic or whatever words were said. Who do you play next week? Oh, we play Rangers next week. Is that? Do you know what? You're kind of voicing your support for a team who you're going into training on Monday and looking at their tactics and working on how you're going to beat them, but on the Sunday you're sitting there cheering when their goals go in. That's, again, it's cheering when their goals go in. As you say, that's kind of the nature of the team you've grown up supporting. But when you're publicly saying it, it shows that it's a disrespect and a naivety for me. I mean, it's not something like I didn't sit absolutely fuming or anything. Like, I was just sort of like thought that's a bit off. I'm not. I didn't think it was the majorest of issues, but like I think these players should have more social media training and should kind of. Should kind of be wiser than that, and I think that's maybe something the club needs to look at educating them with. Because as much as us three might not take it that personally or take that much issue with it, there will be people in our support who, in essence, will be baying for their blood.
No, absolutely.
because of the tweets that are made.
No, absolutely. I think that's it. I think, you know, with a kind of point like this, it's easy to, you know, for the debate to be quite polarised. You'll have some on one side saying, oh, it doesn't matter, they're just young guys who support a football team. There'll be some on the other side saying it's a disgrace, you know, they shouldn't play for Motherwell again. And I think the truth is perhaps somewhere in the middle, as I think we've all kind of said there. I think that it's naive, it's a little bit daft, and I think it is unprofessional. You know, as we've said, I think all of these guys tend to have the whole sort of professional footballer at Motherwell Football Club on their Twitter bios, and I think if your Twitter's public, then you're an ambassador of the club, and that means not just, you know, your tweets being seen by supporters of Motherwell, it's been, you know, they're being seen by supporters perhaps all over the world, depending on why they might come across your Twitter account. And if that's the case, you know, if you've got folk in England or France or Spain or wherever it may be who happen to stumble across the Twitter account of a young Motherwell player who seems to be quite blatantly and quite publicly showing a support for the next team that Motherwell play, it doesn't reflect well on Motherwell, it doesn't reflect well on Scottish football, and it certainly doesn't reflect well on the player themselves. So I suppose it's something that the club may look at. I think from the moment that Lee Irwin opened his mouth in the post-match interview in the after the playoffs, and I think Gordon Strachan picked up on it, you know, it was quite clear that we don't tend to do a great deal of media training with our young players. So maybe that will be something for the club to look at going forward. We'll move on then just to, you know, the obvious on Saturday. As Joe, you mentioned earlier, you know, a win against Inverness, suddenly we're 7 points clear going into the split. But a defeat, suddenly there's 1 point. Given we've still to play Inverness after the split, as well as, you know, Accies and the other teams around us, how important is this game, Joe?
It's absolutely massive, and as I said earlier, it's one of those ones that a win in the game would be a big step towards safety from the automatic relegation spot anyway. I would obviously still be very much in the mix for the playoffs, and obviously 7 points, given the unpredictability of our team and the goals we can concede's certainly not set in stone. But I mean, in terms of mentality wise, you go into the split 7 points clear. You kind of, you've got 2 weeks between games, and then you come into the next game after the split with a bit of breathing space. Then certainly, yeah, it's massive from that respect. It's also one that's just kind of, whether we win or not, whether irrespective of kind of the points gap, for us to kind of do anything between now and the end of the season, I think we just desperately need that win, and we desperately need to win in front of our home supporters. We last won at home in November against Partick, so that's certainly something that we're kind of overdue. But talking at the football with a couple of guys yesterday, and they were saying that, generally speaking, we kind of, before these games, we said that our tough fixtures were out the way, and we were now entering into a sort of series of winnable games, if you like. But unfortunately, traditionally, the home team wins the Partick Thistle and Motherwell game, and form-wise, traditionally, again, the away team tends to win the Motherwell and Inverness game. It is actually a game that can very much, I know you said this earlier, Jay, before we were recording, but it's very much a game I could see ending in a draw.
I mean, Buster, that's it. I kind of predicted a draw for Saturday. Obviously, I might change that depending on team news. We obviously wait to see, you know, how a few injuries might, you know, clear up before then. But I mean, Buster, how would a draw go on Saturday, do you think? If we went into the split, obviously it would depend on how Aki's do, whether they would pull further ahead. But if we went into the split in pretty much the same position we're in now, would that be acceptable? Would a point be okay on Saturday, given Inverness are behind us and therefore would not be catching any, you know, making any ground on us? Or is it really a must-win game?
Well, I think it is a must-win game. But as you say, if Inverness don't gain any ground on us, you can't really grumble about that. But you mentioned Hamilton. Hamilton are playing Dundee, who are, of course, just a point above ourselves and Hamilton. So, you know, that would be an interesting fixture to keep an eye on there as well. But I think the Inverness game, I think we have to win. I don't think there's any doubts about that, to be fair. We're essentially now just going to be playing, we're just going to be playing bottom six teams. There's no other games before this. But so it's going to be, you know, these games, the Invernesses, the Hamiltons, the Dundees, these are the games that we need to pick up the points in. Fair dues, Ross County and Kilmarnock are probably definitely not out of it yet anyway, considering how many points there is to play for, but I don't think they'll be as worried as, you know, the four teams at the bottom of the table there. But I think the home games especially is where we need to start picking up points.
So how would you approach it then? Obviously, we've spoke earlier about the midfield, about, you know, some defensive frailties still existing. We've mentioned the system perhaps not working since Ibrox. I mean, we obviously will need to wait and see how Molt is, whether McManus is an early return. Tate seems to have been on the verge of a comeback for the last few weeks. We obviously, you know, we'll wait with anticipation this week to see how they come back. But, I mean, how would you approach it, having witnessed the last few games?
That's a difficult question there. As you say, the 3-4-3 or whatever it was seemed to do pretty well against Rangers. It was actually not too bad against Hamilton as well. We just couldn't hit the target and obviously didn't score any goals. It wasn't working against Thistle on Saturday, and we changed it into, you know, a flat back four, as you mentioned. So how we approach it, I don't know. It's maybe worth looking at going with a flat back four again. Who would be the personnel on the team? I don't know. As you said, the centre midfield is something which, you know, there's a lot of players who could play in there, but I think we'll probably see Pearson and Clay again. Whether or not that'll be right, I don't know for sure, but as he says, if we do stick with the same personnel and it doesn't work this time, I think we then have to look at obviously changing up for 100% for sure. But how we're going to go about it, I don't know. And as he says, if there's going to be guys like Tate, Moult, maybe still injured. I honestly don't know. But it's a hard one, because if Moult is fit, I would maybe still like to see them play three up front. But if he's not, I think we're going to have to go with Bowman and McDonald. But again, I think we're going to see the sort of a similar team to what we've seen all season.
What about yourself, Joe? I know you'd obviously mentioned earlier, you seemed quite critical, if you like, about the back three and the fact that we went to the back four and suddenly we looked a lot stronger. Is it as simple as Robinson simply changing back to a back four this Saturday? I know it was mentioned earlier that we seem to be shifting the under-20s around to play what is essentially the 3-5-2 or 3-4-3. You know, a bit like, you know, a lot of sides do, where they make their academy sides play that formation, so when the players step up, there's no, you know, they're used to it. Does that suggest that the back three is here to stay, or do we really need to be changing things for Saturday?
I think we probably need to change things for Saturday. It depends how he views Inverness. It certainly didn't work against Partick, and it ultimately had its failings against Hamilton as well, because we failed to take all 3 points there. I think a lot of it might be attributed to the fact that Richard Tate's been injured and he's not had faith in Jack McMillan to step up. So it's been a case of that almost, that he's maybe been, his hand's been forced. But certainly I don't think if we sent the same 11 players out that we did yesterday in a 4-4-2 formation, that all of a sudden they would have been able to stop the aimless long balls and string a few passes together. I don't think that alone is enough, but I think it certainly might help. And I think that Freer looks to be a sort of creative asset just now, in terms of he against St Johnston, and to an extent against Accies, he didn't get much of a chance to do much yesterday. Has been the guy who's been able to kind of trouble fullbacks and put crosses in. I actually think the best performance I've seen from us in recent times personally was against St Johnston at times, although we lost the game 2-1. I thought that day that we played a sort of 4-4-2, Cadden had a decent game on the right, and Freer for me was man of the match that day on the left. So in terms of creating goal scoring chances, I think for me I would be looking to play Freer in a role where he doesn't need to watch the full back and the wide midfielder. Play him in a role where he's able to run at the full back, get crosses in, get to the byline, and I think that's going to be the biggest chance of creating something for Moult, McDonald and Bowman. I don't think if we play Freer left wing back, then he's going to be able to create those opportunities for him. And again, if Lasley's suspended and he can't step in, and we are going to be playing Clay and Pearson in the middle of the park and things, if we can persist with the formation we played on Saturday, I don't see, if we've got Freer stuck back at left wing back, I don't see where that creative spark's going to come from at any point in the team. So yeah, definitely if it was up to me, based on what I know, I would be changing the shape on Saturday.
So just to draw things to a close then, we've got Inverness obviously on Saturday before the split. I've noticed in Steelman Online, particularly after yesterday, I don't know why I persist with going on to read and base, you know, a lot of these points on it, but it is, you know, it's there and you get to kind of read what certain fans are thinking, and a lot seem to be, you know, that's it, the season's over, we're going down. The argument, the counter sort of argument to that is always that we are a side with guys like Chrissy Cadden, Scott McDonald, Louis Moult. I mean, how is the last six games going to pan out? It's quite a broad question. There obviously is no obvious answer, but for me, I mean, are we kidding ourselves on to a certain degree? You know, that kind of thought process that, oh well, once Louis Moult and Richard Tate come back, you know, we'll be 7 or 8 points comfortably clear. The last couple of games in particular, you know, particularly Accies and Thistle, have said to me, as I said earlier, it's not just the bad luck. We aren't good enough. Okay, we were missing Moult. We still had Cadden. We still had McDonald. there on Saturday, and we had one shot on target that came from a Zach Jules header. I mean, Buster, who's right in this argument? I mean, are we a good side that for whatever reason just can't get things going, or are we where we should be because we've kind of convinced ourselves that we're a better squad than we actually are?
I think it's a bit of the latter, to be honest with you. You know, I've been saying all season, you know, as McGee was sacked, before McGee was sacked, the players have to take a look at themselves here as well. As you said, we've got some great individual talents there. You mentioned them, basically, Moult, Donald, Cadden. It's kind of... I think it's one of those things where, again, as we came to play St Johnstone, I was saying to yourselves in the stand, I don't actually really know that many St Johnstone players. I don't think there's that many of them that stand out to me, but they play as a team, and you know they finished top six again for, I think it was a sixth season running. I don't think we have not the ability, but I don't think we have the sort of team spirit or even the ability to play as a team as we really should, consider, you know, we've got these good, definitely top six quality individual talents, but we just don't seem to have that team spirit or the ability to play as a team. I think that's why we're struggling, to be honest with you.
I think it's quite funny there, Buster, that you do raise a very valid point about St Johnstone, but when you're talking about their team spirit and togetherness, when last weekend two of their players get sent off for knocking seven shades out of each other.
That's a fair point, I suppose, but you know, as I say...
No, basically what you say is absolutely spot on. I think the thing about our squad being, we convinced ourselves that we've got a better squad than what we have, is the thing of it's our squad on paper, perhaps, but I mean, you look at, I don't mean to single out individuals, but for the basis of the point, I'm going to have to. Stephen Pearson and Lionel Ainsworth on paper is probably a lot better than what Stephen Pearson and Lionel Ainsworth have been in reality this season. And if you look at our two big assets for me, are Moulton McDonald, are front two, but they're both service-based strikers, if you like. They're both players who will do well for you if you get the ball to them in good areas. They're not the likes of, for example, a young McFadden could pick the ball up, beat a man and score a goal out of nothing. Moulton McDonald's strengths lie elsewhere from that, so unless we can sort of get them that delivery and that service, then they're not going to thrive, and that's ultimately why we can't kind of get the best out of them, as good as their goal tallies have been so far.
Right, well, final question. I'm going to put it to you, Joe. Put you on the spot since you're the guest. Don't know if you'll be back on before the end of the season. Obviously, hope you will be. But just to put you on the spot, Saturday's game, prediction, and where we'll finish in the season.
This is a real test of my
basically will we stay up is what I'm asking you.
I think on Saturday we will score the first goal but draw, and I think we'll finish in 11th place.
And how will the playoffs go?
Oh, brilliant in playoffs. we'll smash them.
Fair enough, I'll take that. A happy note to end on after quite a lot of criticism and negatives there. Well, that'll do us for this week then. Joe, Buster, thanks as always.
Cheers, Jim. Well, thank you.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next week at some point to look forward to the last five fixtures of the season. Hopefully a wee bit further ahead of Inverness than we are now. Until then, cheers.